Good morning and welcome to Finding Your Way Home, Real Talk on Real Estate. My name is Sherry Doherty and I am your weekly host at 10 a.m. Monday mornings, talking all things local real estate to Kingston and area. Today, I am delighted to have with me a special guest again. I have Karen Matthew with me. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me again.
I'm excited. She's becoming a regular guest. Karen is an owner and a mortgage agent at The Mortgage Professionals, and today we are going to talk all things credit ratings. So I know that may not be everyone's favorite topic. It's much like it's tax season, and no one wants to talk about that, including me. However, it's a really important topic that people understand, and I think people need to realize that it impacts you in such significant ways, including up to what you could purchase a home for, but also if you get approved for a rental lease. So there's so many ways it impacts you. Karen is an expert in the area, and I'm going to ask you just to go right back to basics, if you will, Karen, and explain to people what a credit score is.
Great question. So any time that you have active credit, and what I mean by active credit is you have a credit card, you have a student loan, you have a car loan, you have a car lease, even a cell phone reports to the credit agencies. There's actually two. There's TransUnion and there's Equifax in Canada that they report to. Anytime you are borrowing, repaying, that's reporting every month to the credit agencies. And they produce a report and a score based on how much credit you have, based on how well you repay, when you repay, how you use your credit, etc. And that score is used by the majority of credit providers. Okay. So if you're applying for a rental lease, as you say, landlords use credit scores as one metric. Also, if you're buying a car, even if you're applying for a credit card, you're applying for any credit card, that's what they're looking at. They're looking at your credit score as a metric for how good of a borrower they think you will be.
Okay. And for context, what would a good credit score be considered? Let's say good, moderate, and needs improvement.
Great. So a good, let's say excellent is 800 plus.
Okay.
Good is, let's say, 700 or so plus. Average is six. I wouldn't want to much go below 650 as an average. 650 to 700, I guess, is average to good. And then once you're sort of under 650, You've got to look to improve there. Once you're under 650, that's the metric. A lot of there's a lot of mortgage lenders who won't lend under 650.
Okay.
Further, there's a lot that won't lend. There's others that won't lend under 600. So that's probably the biggest one. But there's still lenders that will say at 650, under 650, they won't lend to you.
Okay. And I know one of the things I really enjoy about working with you and my clients enjoy is you are so honest. And if someone comes to you with a 500 credit score, you're going to tell them you're probably not ready to buy a house until you remediate your credit score. But you also give them a map to do that. Mm-hmm. And you also explain to them what that timeline looks like. Mm-hmm. So I know, and you can give more greater specifics, but I know I've heard you say like, okay, you know what, pay this other credit card off, mm-hmm. get rid of this car loan. And on your student loans, just make sure that they're paid on time every month for the next year. Mm-hmm. And then that could bring up your credit score X amount of points. And we might be able to reconsider whether or not you're ready for home ownership. That's correct, right?
Yes, it's largely correct. The couple points I'd make is there are clients whose credit scores are lower that we do get mortgages for. The key there is if you're somebody who has a low credit score and let's say less than 20% down payment,
okay,
that's probably the challenge because that's where the rules are the strictest. If you have less than 20% down payment and you have a low credit score, it's going to be a challenge to get you a mortgage.
Okay.
If you have 20% down payment or more and your credit score is lower, it depends why it's low. So there is a possibility that I can get people a mortgage where their credit score is 500 and they have 20% down, but where are they buying? What was the reason for the credit score being low? You know, some people struggled during COVID or deferred debts during COVID. Some people can have life events that aren't repeated. They got ill or a family member got ill and they had to take time off. So I guess it comes down to the reason why. But I'd like to backstop a bit before we get into sort of credit repair and talk about why your credit score is the way it is.
Yes, please do.
Which I think is probably the largely most misunderstood thing about credit is it used to be that it was fairly simple. If you did not pay your debts on time, you would have a poor credit score.
Okay.
But if you did pay your debts on time, even if you paid the minimum balance on your credit card every month on time, you would have a good credit score. And it's not that simple anymore.
Oh, okay.
It really isn't. So now a credit score is a function of a whole host of different things. And it's a function of yes, you paying off your minimum balance or your debts on time, but it's also a function of how much of a balance to your limit. So when you get a credit card, for example, that has a limit of $5,000, if you put $4,000 a month on it every month because you want to collect the points or because you use it and you pay it off every month, your credit score is actually on average going to be lower.
Wow, that's a bummer.
Yep.
So, because and we all like our credit card points.
Yes, a lot of people like, and a lot of people do use their credit card and pay it off. Now, I'm not saying not to use your credit card. What I'm saying is what matters in that example is the balance to limit.
Okay.
If you had a card where the limit was $8,000 and you were putting $4,000 every month and paying it off, that's actually not detrimental because you're only using half the limit.
Okay.
You have to remember the credit score agency can't see your bank account. It has no idea if you have a checking account with enough money to pay the balance off every month, or if you're getting paid on a Thursday, paying your credit card, your checking account's now down to zero.
Okay.
And you're waiting another month to get paid to pay
the balance. So
you're
living off that.
You're living off of it. Exactly. Right. So that's what the credit agency or calculation assumes. So what I say to people is think of 50% of your limit as the actual limit. If you have a card with a $5,000 balance, try not to put more than $2,500 on it, even if you're paying it off every month.
Interesting. Okay.
And if you find that you're putting more on, then try and up your limit.
Okay. And that doesn't hurt you.
It doesn't hurt you unless you are credit seeking a lot of different sources in a very short period of time.
Okay. So if I apply for five credit cards.
Correct. Okay. Or if you go car loan shopping in that same month, you up your credit card limit, you're credit seeking from a bunch of different environments.
Okay.
Right. So that can hurt your score. Calling your bank or your credit card company to raise your limit on one card, if you haven't been aggressively credit seeking recently, is not going to hurt your score.
Okay.
The other thing, and if there's nothing else that people remember from this one thing, I want them to remember the rule of twos.
Okay.
Which is, ideally to have a credit score, to have sufficient credit to have a credit score even, because sometimes you can have a low score from what we call thin credit. You don't have enough credit.
Yep.
Or you're not using it enough.
Mm-hmm.
So we tell people that they have to have two active sources. So two sources they are actively using, and that could be a car loan and a credit card. That could be two credit cards. That could be a line of credit and a credit card. A car lease and a credit card, a student loan and a credit card.
Okay.
If you have two active sources that you've had for at least 2 years.
Okay.
So newer credit does not give you as much credit, if you'll excuse the pun. you get sort of, you get more, a better score if you have longer term credit. So two sources for at least 2 years with a limit of at least $2,000.
Oh boy, that's a lot of twos, yeah. But it does make it easy to remember.
Two sources, 2 years, and $2,000. And there's a whole bunch of other things in there. So we talked about the balance to limit. That's probably the one that we see. We can have someone who, you know, pays their credit card on time every month, but if all their cards, or if they have three cards and they all look like they're maxed,
right.
Even if they have that money in the bank account to pay them off,
yep.
Their credit score can be low.
Okay.
Going over limit is another one.
Oh, that's a bad thing?
Going over limit
okay.
Will drop your score quite quickly.
Okay.
Now, the good news with the balance to limit and going over the limit is that it's fixed very quickly.
Okay.
Credit on the whole takes a long time to repair. If you've missed payments, mm-hmm. It can take 2 or 3 years before your credit score really rises if you missed a lot of payments in a short period of time. It takes a long time of good behavior to sort of get over a short period of bad behavior.
Okay.
But if you have an over limit or you're using a lot of your limits and you suddenly drop that, you pay it off, you pay it down, you start only using 50% of the limit, your score improves quite quickly.
Okay. Well,
so that's actually an easy fix because it's not a long-term repair.
Right. Problem. It wasn't chronic or something like that?
Correct.
Okay.
So the credit score is a function of the balance to limit. It's a function of being under the limit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a function of paying your... And when I say paying on time, this is something that also sometimes isn't understood. If your due date on your credit card is May 23rd,
yep.
And you send the payment on May 23rd, that doesn't mean the credit card receives it on
May 23rd. Yeah, it's not making it. No. I learned that in my credit card days.
Yes. So if your deadline is May the 23rd, send your payment on the 19th or the 20th.
Yeah, I would say 5 days before.
At least, mm-hmm. Usually it's 2 to 3 business days, but depends on the bank, depends on how you're sending it, depends on how you're paying. So make sure, because some people will say, well, I sent my payment on the payment due date. Well, it's not received necessarily.
Yeah.
So try and pay your payment a little ahead of time. When you pay your payments on time and you're using less than half the limit and you have enough sources... The other thing I would say is if you have, let's say you have a line of credit and two credit cards, and you've had one credit card for 15 years and the other one for 3 years, and you go to a Ottawa Senators game, mm-hmm. and they have those stalls.
Oh, I know you can who's get there. Yes. One of the credit card yes. companies give you a free T-shirt
free
if you
t-shirt
do a credit card,
or free tickets, or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. And you decide, you know what, I'm going to take this card. I've been looking for another one, and you cancel the card that you've had for 15 years because you think, well, I don't want to have three right. credit cards reporting plus my line of credit. Don't do that.
Okay.
Because that oldest card was giving you history.
Okay.
And the moment you cancel it for two newer cards, mm-hmm. now if you had two cards for 15 years,
right.
you cancel one. Probably okay.
Okay.
But if you had one card for 15 years, one card for 2 years, and this card you just got, your credit score is going to drop as a function of the fact that you're, that you've just gotten rid of the largest piece of your credit history.
Right. Okay. Right?
So sometimes what we've seen is people cancel credit and their credit score drop.
Interesting, because you think, I'm cutting this one up, and look, now we only have one credit card or two credit cards. Look how
exactly.
good we are.
Exactly.
And you just hurt yourself.
Yep.
I'm certain I've done that in my lifetime.
Yep.
Probably before I knew you. I'm
all
certain I've done that in my lifetime.
None of these things are explained incredibly well. That's part of the problem. Nobody explains
this
to us.
None of it's explained, period. No. This definitely needs to be a class in high school.
Oh, it should.
Or
actually,
at least college.
On another note, and sorry to take this as a side topic, I literally just saw this, and I haven't done any research into it, that they're creating a financial literacy test to graduate for high school students in Ontario.
Good.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
I just saw this come out.
Oh.
I think this is absolutely fantastic.
That
I don't know
fantastic.
What is going to be part of this financial literacy, but I really hope credit's on there.
I should be, absolutely.
So going back to this, so we talked about keeping your balance under limit, making your payment on time, which really means paying before time. We talked about try not to cancel your oldest credit until the new credit has had a chance to, like if your second card gets to 5, 6, 7 years, okay, maybe at that point.
Right.
So I'm not saying to never cancel it. But the other thing that's important is if you have a car loan or if you have a student loan, and you're paying it off, like you're getting to the last payment.
Yep.
That's wonderful. Congratulations. But you want to replace that.
Really?
Because, well, I should further explain that. It depends how many sources you have.
Okay.
But most people do not have, particularly younger people, don't have five cards.
Right.
So if they have a student loan and a credit card, or a car loan and a credit card, and they pay that student loan or car loan off, now they've just got the one credit card.
So they're down to one.
They're down to one source.
That doesn't meet the rule of two.
Correct. Doesn't meet the rule of twos. You've got it.
I got this.
Doesn't meet the rule of twos. And so that's a downside because now just the same example I just gave where somebody cancels the 15-year credit card, you've just lost a reporting source.
Does your cell phone bill count?
Here's the funny thing.
Okay.
Your cell phone bill counts against you, but not for you.
Well, that's
so,
not
I
fair.
Know, it's totally not
How
fair.
How is that?
And sorry, I should clarify that I'm speaking from a mortgage point of view. I do not know how car dealerships look at this.
Okay.
Or I believe the credit card agencies are similar to us because the bank policy is similar, but I don't know how car, and I don't know how landlords look at this.
Okay.
But
random thought, a lot of people actually just pay their cell phone bill on their credit card.
Yes, which is fine as long as you have, so that's actually one of the strategies that I recommend, because what I will sometimes have as an objection to somebody who regularly uses one card is, I don't want another card.
Okay, yeah.
I don't want to get a second card,
right.
Which I perfectly respect. Mm-hmm. They have one card. So what I say to them is, look, I totally understand that. But what I would recommend to you is get the second card, put one thing on it, like your cell phone.
Yep.
Because it's a fairly predictable bill.
Yep.
Set up your bank to auto pay the balance on that card every month. So let's say the cell phone bill is, I don't know, $75.
Sure.
And you know it's $75 pretty much every month. You could set your bank account to auto pay that $75 or auto pay $85 to cover you.
Right.
Every month, 4 days before the payment's due. And then you never have to bring that credit card out. You could rip it up if you wanted
to. Yeah, put it in your drawer.
All that's happening now is because the credit score is not worried about you doing 50 transactions in a month. It is borrow, repay, borrow, repay, borrow, repay. Quality over quantity.
Okay.
Right. So they want to see that pattern of borrow repay. If you have two cards and the one card, all that happens is that cell phone and paid off and cell phone and paid off, you're still getting what you need.
Right. So that's good credit for you.
Correct. Second reporting source, you're using hardly any of the limit. The limit on that is $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, and you're putting $75 a month on it.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
You're actually helping yourself then.
Correct.
So don't be stubborn and say you don't want a second card.
Yep.
Listen to Karen.
Yeah. Exactly right. Exactly right. So that's an easy way for people who say, well, I don't want to carry two cards or I don't want to actively use two cards. So we talked about if you're going to pay off your student loan or your car loan, making sure that you have sort of, and I would try and get that backup source in place prior. So when you're 6 months away from paying off your student loan or your car loan, yay, mm-hmm. Try and get that second credit card or second line of credit, whatever it is, second source in place.
Okay.
Because then you have it ready. For when it's paid off, you've already got something reporting for you.
Great. Okay.
Right. So on to a couple other things that I think are important for credit is that the credit score that people see when they pull their own credit. So people can go onto Equifax.com and pull their own credit. They can see their score, or they can see their report. That is not the same score that we see.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So we very often clients. Yeah, so there can be a variance of up to, I've seen up to 100 points, but it's usually about 50 points between what they see and what we see.
Why would that be?
Normally lower, but not always. Primarily because when you pull your own score, it's what's called like a retail score.
Okay.
It's just the sort of consumer score that they're providing to you. The score that different providers pull, like car loans have their own version of the calculation that they've tailored to what they're looking for that gives them the best idea of whether you're going to pay the car loan back.
Okay.
The score that mortgage lenders are using is tailored in the same way to a calculation that is the best view as to whether or not you're going to pay a mortgage back.
Okay.
So it's, you could argue it's a more diligent score. It's a more thorough score, maybe you could argue, than a retail score.
Okay. So if I pulled up my credit score and I thought I had a 800 and I was all proud and happy and showed you, and you said, well, really, Sherry, when I pull my view, I see 750. Would you be able to point the differences out to me?
Sometimes I can and sometimes I can't.
Okay.
Part of the problem with particularly, I'm leaning a little bit more on Equifax in this case, but it exists with TransUnion too, is it's a very black box calculation on their end that they use. So I can point to whether or not there's data that's different on the two, but the score itself is calculated in a different metric that they don't provide us the calculation.
Something in the background is...
And I should say, I have seen it higher on our side than the client's pulling. So
that would be good.
Not often, but it does happen.
Okay.
The other thing that I think that's really important for people to know is there are two credit score reporting agencies, and the score is very different between the two.
That's bizarre as well.
It is bizarre.
Because my data should be the same in both sources.
It should, but it's often not.
Okay.
So that leads us to the next point. Number one, that credit agencies can only do what they are provided with.
Yep.
If XYZ Bank is not sending the reports for your credit card, or they're not sending them frequently, or the data is out of date, or Equifax on their end has an error in pulling it.
Yeah.
There are, this is actually the statistic. I'm going to try and remember the exact number here. I think it's Equifax did a study and there were errors on 44% of consumer bureaus.
Wow.
In 2021. Yeah. And the errors could be tiny. It could be as simple as an old address that you lived at years ago being reported as your current address.
Okay.
So that it could be a simple error, but very often it is an out of date debt that you've paid off still sitting there.
Okay.
It's not causing your score most of the time, not always. Most of the time, the errors aren't impacting your score, but there are times when absolutely they are. If it's an old credit that's reporting, it's not impacting your score significantly because usually we can see that it stopped reporting in 2021.
Okay.
So we know that either it's old or out of date or incorrect or something's gone wrong there. We can see that there's something wrong there because it's not reported in 4 or 5 years. But sometimes, you know, I've had clients where they have a loan that's not even theirs on their bureau.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Somebody's data got mixed up with theirs.
Mm-hmm.
I had one a couple of weeks ago where his date of birth was wrong.
That would be serious.
Yep. His date of birth was wrong. So every time I was trying to pull his credit, it was flagging as incorrect. And then when we sent his mortgage application in, we had to provide a lot of additional documentation to prove his own date of birth because someone somewhere input it wrong in an application.
Oh, boy.
And it got overridden. Yeah, so we are fixing that. It's all fixable. But there's lots of errors. We probably out of every 10 client pulls, I'll find errors on 3 at least.
Wow, that is frightening. I have so many questions that I was thinking about while you were talking. So may I rapid fire you with questions?
Go ahead.
Okay, you were talking about thin credit for a while. And I know we have a lot of new Canadians. So how is credit considered? We have professionals who move here from other countries, and how do we get their credit performance, I guess I'll call it, from other countries, or do they basically have to start from scratch in Canada and be patient?
So good, great question. And the reality is there's a couple answers to this, but knowing how to handle it is important because if they know from the outset what to do, they are in a much better position to be able to buy.
Okay.
So there is a new to Canada mortgage program for people who come to Canada that allows the fact that their credit is going to be thin. It's going to be new. And sometimes they may not even have a score.
Okay.
Typically they do within 6 months of using a card. But what lenders will allow for is a couple of different options. Option number one, we can get an international credit bureau from their country of origin. That's easier in some countries than it is in others.
Yeah.
But it is one option. Option two is we provide what's called an alternative source of credit. And this is typically 12 months of bank statement showing them paying a utility bill or rent or car insurance or something that
is in Canada,
something that is a regular bill. Where this is challenging, and I have had this in the past, is when you have spouses where all of the bills are in one spouse's name.
Okay. And also don't think people should do that, but that's just me.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, it should.
I'll take the lower one, but my husband can have the higher one.
Exactly. I'll take all the low bills. That's fine.
Right.
But I think in this case, what should happen is the spouses should try and at least give a couple of bills in the other person's name.
Okay.
Even if they're coming from a joint account.
Right.
Because the problem is lenders are looking for credit in one person's name. They want to see 12 months of bank statements in Jane's name with the rent coming out of Jane's account or the utility payment coming out of Jane's account. When they see a joint account and let's say the other partner, Jim, already has a credit score or already has reporting sources of credit, oftentimes it's a challenge with lenders to say, well, hey, like her pay is going to that account or everything's coming out.
Right.
So really when thinking about credit, if you're new to Canada, you want to think about alternative sources.
Okay.
Get a lease in your name. If not a lease, get a utility bill in your name. If not a utility bill, pay the car insurance.
Like something fairly quickly.
Yeah, and unfortunately, typically not a cell phone bill.
Okay.
And that actually, it will count in an exception, I'll say that in this case.
Okay. And in that example we were kind of getting close to is that often happens as well with widows.
Yes.
So we often work with older people and unfortunately one of them becomes a widow. Mm-hmm. And if it is the person who managed the money and all the bills and the mortgage and the things were in the deceased person's name, it can be a real problem for the person who's left.
Absolutely
to
correct.
To establish themselves, even though they're probably financially fine, it's very difficult. So, you know, even as we age, we need to think about how we're strategizing. And if there are people out there who have nothing in their name, meet with a financial planner.
Absolutely.
And that's not even either one of us.
Yep.
But we do know some good ones.
Yep.
And make sure that you do have good strategies to protect yourself in the event that your loved one that you count on for those things passes.
Absolutely. And the other thing I'd say too is a supplementary card is not the same as a joint card.
Okay.
So if you and I, wonderful you and I, were married, and I had a credit card and I gave you a supplementary card.
Right.
So any charges you put are on my card and I'm paying it off. That's not reporting on your credit.
Right. Okay.
So it does, I can do that. That's, there's no downside to doing that, but it's not, if you're looking to give some additional credit support, like let's say if we're married and you have no credit or you have thin credit, I could add you as a joint cardholder on
my
card.
Yes, and then that's better for me to establish credit.
Correct.
Right? Okay.
Right. Perfect. And so that's, so if you're thinking about that, if you're like, oh, well, I've put my wife or I've put my husband on my card, as a supplementary cardholder, that's not benefiting their credit.
Okay.
You have to be a joint and full cardholder.
Okay. Another random question that popped to mind while you were talking. Is it better to have 5 credit cards with $5,000 limits or 1 credit card with a $25,000 limit?
2 with no
limit. The answer is always
C. The short answer, I guess, unfortunately, is the way the calculation on the credit bureau works, ironically, you're better to have 5 cards with a $5,000 limit as long as you're not spending more than $2,500 on each of those cards than 1 card with a $25,000 limit with no other sources. Because although you've got 1 card with a very large source, lenders still want to see more than one source.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So. I do remember a time when we had a lot of credit cards and we just decided that, you know, let's consolidate and paring it down. But then there was always that we didn't know what we didn't know. So do we just keep the one with the big credit limit and get rid of the other 4? But also there was other debt. So it was okay. We had more than 2.
Yeah. As long as you, and that's the thing I encourage people. I've had people come to me after they've just done a big exercise like that.
Yeah.
And they've canceled a bunch of cards.
Yeah.
And they come to me and they don't understand why their credit scores are like, we just paid everything. Like everything should be
good.
Better. And that's where I'd say like talk, you know, ideally talk to someone before you make significant changes to your credit.
Agreed.
Just to see how the impact is going to be.
Okay. Right. I know this is your favorite question. You've pre-approved somebody with a 90-day pre-approval letter at a good mortgage rate. Should they do anything to financially impact themselves, such as get another credit card, get a new job, or buy a car before they actually make their purchase and close on their home?
Great question, and not without speaking to me first. I'm not saying that people can't do that. I'm saying that they have to. We have to account for it. If we find out that they've changed their job, even to a very similar job, same field, it could impact things.
Right.
So if we know about it, we can plan for it. I've had clients change jobs in the middle of pre-approval, but we've talked about it, we've planned for it, no problem.
We're,
by the time they put their offer in, we have a plan. I've got all the documentation I need and we're good. And I've pre-cleared it with the lender, we're good. I've had clients whose car died. Right?
Okay. You have no choice to buy a new car.
You've got no choice. So we talk about it. We say, well, this is the payment that we can build in, or this is how it's going to shift your pre-approval. Mm-hmm. If you buy this much car, you're going to have to lower your pre-approval to this because the car payment factors into your approval.
Right.
Okay. Right. And so can you stretch out? Unfortunately, sometimes it's a little bit of what's good for the mortgage isn't always the best thing financially, because lenders, ironically, what they focus on is the payment. They don't focus on the interest. And to some extent, yes, they focus on the balance. But when we're qualifying for a mortgage, what they're looking for is cash flow.
Okay.
How much cash flow do you bring in, and how much are you obligated to pay out between your car loan, your credit cards, student loan, all those balances?
And what's that ratio? So what is a good ratio of debt to income?
So lenders typically want your debts, including your mortgage payment at the stress test, your property taxes, your home insurance, and all those payments to be under 40% of your income.
40, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's low.
Yep.
That is actually
quite low. It can be 44, but then that's also with a good credit. But it's sort of between 40 and 44 is where you want to be. And it's a challenge if you've got, we find lately, particularly lately with large car payments.
Yep.
We're seeing a lot of car payments that are, even if they're expressed biweekly, they are $700, $800, $900 a month, yeah. $1,100 a month.
Yeah.
And that is a challenge when qualifying.
So you told me a statistic the other day that I'm not going to remember, but I'm going to let you say it. It was something to the effect of, for every certain amount of money that you owe, it impacts your ability to borrow up to $100,000.
Yes, yeah, so it was for every $18,000 on a credit card that you might hold, it can reduce your ability to borrow by up to $100,000.
That's crazy.
Yep.
That's so much.
Yeah. And it's part of the reason is the regulators and rules force us to use a payment that is 3% of the balance.
Okay.
So if you have, $1,000 on a card, that's fine. But if you have $10,000 on a card, that's eating up into your payments,
right,
or into your ratios with the payment that we have to use.
Right. Okay. In our last couple of minutes, if you had to tell three things to people about managing their credit rating, what would they be?
So number one, I would highly recommend everybody go. You can get a free report from Equifax on equifax.com. It doesn't always provide you with your score in the free report, but it shows you what's there. Check it.
Okay.
Check your date of birth. Check your addresses. Check all the sources of credit on there. Are they all reporting? Sometimes there's something that you have. There's a credit card not reporting. This isn't a good thing.
Right. You want to get credit for it.
Yes. And because if we pull an Equifax bureau and it gets to the lender, occasionally they'll pull another bureau and report on. So in that case, make sure that you're looking at your own credit, looking at the score, or looking at the report. Number two, just remember the rule of twos. Two sources, at least 2 years, at least $2,000 limit if you're beginning out. Bigger limit is fine, as long as you're not using more than, and that's the last thing, is try not to use more than 50% of the balance.
Right. Okay. That makes so
check
great
your,
sense.
Check your credit, rule of twos, and try not to use more than 50% of the limit, not the balance, sorry, 50% of the limit.
Okay, that makes great sense. And again, we were talking a little bit about renters as well. This mm-hmm. will impact your ability to lease a home roof over your head, because people are looking for proof of ID and they're looking for your credit scores as well as employment letters and rental history. Mm-hmm. So this is such an important thing that people really, really do need to be aware of, in how significantly your daily spending behavior behind the simply throwing down a credit card is actually going to impact your long-term ability to get into a home, whether you own it or rent it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you very much for your time today, Karen. It is always enlightening to have a conversation with you. This information is incredibly valuable. How would someone get a hold of you if they wanted to?
They can email me, Karen@mtgprof.com, or they can text me or give me a call, 613-893-4139.
Perfect. Well, with that, I wish you and all of our listeners a lovely day finding your way home.
Thank you.
CFRC is stoked to partner with KPP Concerts on an awesome summer lineup. On June 27th, be sure to catch Long Range Hustle and Psychobilly legends Reverend Horton Heat on June 28th. On July 3rd, check out alt-country legend Fred Eaglesmith, followed by folk punk legend Billy Bragg on July 5th. Emo is alive and well on July 8th with Arms Length and Mo Kenny come to town on July 9th. Hip-hop pioneer Souls of Mischief are here on July 21st, and we'll get some hardcore action with Spaced on July 23rd. Almond Monica brings Arabic Jazz to Kingston on August 7th, and finally, August 9th, you can see Lucero Ben Nichols. For tickets and full information on these and other awesome shows, visit kppconcerts.com.
Choices, consequences haunting me, but But some things are so clear and obvious, I need not even think or speak. So spare those in carriage, I need no wedding ring, just one. We'll be right back.
That was Vancouver-based Matthew Good with The Boy Come Home from his 2007 album Hospital Music, an album written and recorded during a rather turbulent time in his life that included a divorce, a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, and a stay in a psychiatric ward following an overdose of Ativan. Leave it to Matthew Good to channel all that negative into art, as it's something that he does extremely well. The show began with New Zealand native Georgia Knott, who records as Georgia Gets By, and the track Wedding Ring, originally released as a single in May of 2026. Hello, everyone, and welcome to No Chords Barred, 90 minutes featuring music by mainstream, independent, and alternative artists from around the globe, going back on occasion as far as the 1980s. Now, I'm Donald Finnegan, the host and producer of the show, one that's a direct result of my own personal hobby of turning over stones and going down rabbit holes in search of new music and artists. Now, rather than just keeping it all to myself, I don't mind sharing with the rest of the class. Because after all, it isn't about me, it's all about the artists and getting them into the ears of music listeners. So with that in mind, we'll continue on and begin this next set with a song many of you listening should know, as it peaked at number 5 on the US Billboard chart. This is Snow Patrol with Chasing Cars.
If I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? Forget what we're told before we get too old. Show me a garden that's burst.
If I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world?
Something stupid, no, you got something to lose. Cause I just can't find my brain when I'm talking to you. But I guess there's just some way about you. Don't get pissed at me right now, cause I'm pulling it out. Cause I'll get real pissed right back, cause you're pulling me down. But I guess there's just some way about you. Talk about it. I'm barely rolling out my bed, but it's just too cold without.
Think I'm a
That was Girl Puppy, the music moniker of Atlanta, Georgia native Becca Harvey, with I Just Do, a track from her 2025 EP, Sweetness. And she was preceded by the Nashville-based alternative rock band Kid Pastel with I Don't Want to Talk About It from their 2024 EP, 419. And my first official find from Luxembourg, Jana Baric, who records as Francis of Delirium. We heard this song Out Tonight from her 2026 full-length album, Run, Run, Pure Beauty. And the set opened with the Northern Irish band Snow Patrol and their biggest hit, Chasing Cars, which can be found on their 2006 album, Eyes Open. This is No Chords Barred with me, Donald Finnegan, and I'll be right back after the break with another two sets of music. Welcome back to No Chords Barred. Up next, we have another song that hit the charts, this one peaking at number 3 on the U.S. adult chart in 1998. From her sophomore solo album, Ophelia, this is Natalie Merchant with Kind and Generous.